here we are, starting this new adventure. I am sitting here in a park near where I live. It's lovely. I hope you can hear a bit of the birds singing. You might hear the occasional dog, maybe even a siren, because this is the purpose of this podcast. Just being as authentic as I can get it to be. I don't want to edit it, because life is really unedited. And the reason why I decided to put together this podcast is exactly that life is a little bit too edited for me right now. I need to communicate my thoughts in a more authentic way, more direct way. And because I want to figure out what's been my impact in sustainability in my life until this point, I thought, well, I'm going to record it. And whoever is interested in listening to this, in this unplugged podcast, then, you know, you're welcome. Welcome to join me in this journey. But I suppose I need to start with the introductions. I'm Virginia Cinquemani. I am a mother of two. I am Italian. I am the owner of a little business called Green Gorilla. I'm an author of a book called Sustain Able. I'm a sustainability consultant. I am a daughter, I'm a partner, I'm a sister. I'm a person. And this is what I would like to communicate through this little experiment, the various faces of me, not just what I publish on social media, because obviously that's quite edited and we know that. So in this podcast, if you'd like to join me, I'd like to tell you a bit about my story, about how I came to this point, you know, from Italy, I suppose, where I was born and raised, and where I stayed for 23 years of my life, and then here in England for the last 20 years, and now I've given away my age. And yeah, I would like to reflect mainly on what does it mean to try and be sustainable every day. What does it mean? You know, the world is in desperate need of all of us to contribute somehow, but striving for perfection is impossible at the same time. So what do you want to achieve? How can you get there? How can you do it in a sustainable way so it doesn't burn you out and it doesn't cause you anxiety? And I suppose this is what I'm trying to do every day in my professional life, in my personal life, in the book that I've written, in the classes that I hold, the training, the master classes, the masterminds, the coaching. I forgot to say, I'm also a coach, a career coach, and a sustainability career coach. So, but you can't get into sustainability thinking that you're going to be perfect, you're going to do everything by the book, and you're never going to cause a negative impact ever again. And you can't get into sustainability or try to be sustainable as much as possible without giving in sometimes, without being imperfect. I think this is the nature of the thing, but the more we are imperfect together, the better it is for this planet. That's what I've been trying to do anyway for the last at least 20 years. So yeah, this podcast is meant to be a little bit of my reflections, some insight into the way I think, the way I do things, some of the stuff that happened in my life every day, some of the very great insights I get into people's minds when I do my coaching, which doesn't stop. doesn't stop from surprising me. I absolutely love, and I'm so curious about people's minds, and the majority of my clients are sustainability professionals, people that work in sustainability, and of course I'm not going to share the personal details, but it's great when some thoughts come through that make me think as well and make me reconsider the way I live my life and the way we live our life as a, you know, as a community. Now, the reason why this podcast is so rough, I actually wanted to call it bootleg at some point, and then I realized it's something illegal, so I got lost in translation there. Because I remember bootleg music cassettes, if you remember, if you are from my same generation, you know, some illegal recording of some famous author and artist. But that was the idea of having something rough and ready so that I don't have to spend time making it pretty, polishing the sound, whatever. I just wanted to give you my thoughts, like if you were sitting here next to me on this bench in this park and we were just chatting, really. Or if I was doing, you know, a coaching session, and sometimes my coaching sessions end up being, you know, quite heart-to-heart conversations, which I really, really love. So that's, I want to get away a little bit from the marketing on social media, the way it's done, or must be done, apparently, where you have to one day share a video, one day share a photo, one day be authentic, one day, you know, be promotional, whatever. I really am a bit fed up of all of this. And the reason why I decided to do that in this particular format was inspired to me by another similar podcast, and I found it so refreshing, by an author and blogger called Kate Flanders. She's Canadian, and she's a minimalist. She's written about several different things, but she's doing at the moment a podcast of this kind, and I love it. So I thought, why not? So thanks, Kate. I'm really sure you will never hear this, but thank you for inspiring me. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. So this is the first installment, episode, whatever it's called. And it's just trying to set to the scenario. Me sitting outdoors as much as it will be possible with the British weather. Here by myself for now. And I'll try and follow the flow. I'll try and see what feels good, what sounds good, without, again, tampering too much. Just if, like, if it was a conversation over the phone with someone that I like and I love and I want to share my experiences with. And because I felt a lot of imposter syndrome over the years, and in spite of that, I managed to achieve, I think, quite a bit professionally, personally. I think sharing some of these stories might help someone out there that might be struggling, might be feeling like their personal contribution in the world doesn't really matter. I hear a lot, you know, what does it matter if I go vegan? You know, it's only one person. What does it matter if I don't take one plane? You know, I'm only one person. But, you know, it's, you know, the ocean, as they say, is made of individual drops of water. So we need to really pull together, even if in an imperfect way, because we are humans and we are imperfect. So let me share some of these stories with you. Maybe, well, I hope they will inspire you. I hope they will give you a little insight into my head. And so I'm really looking forward to share more of me and of my view on life and sustainability via this new me for me, new means, with all the imperfections, all the grammar mistakes, all my Italian accent and everything. So I suppose I can start from saying that I was born in Italy, in Sicily in particular. And if you know about Montalbano, the Inspector Montalbano series on TV, that's exactly where I'm from. And thank you, Montalbano, by the way, for shedding a new light on Sicily, because when I first came to the UK back in 2002, when I said I'm from Sicily, people used to tell me, ah, mafia, spaghetti, which now makes me laugh because nobody's ever dared to do that again after Montalbano became a thing here, I think in the mid 2010 or something. Because Sicily is much more than mafia, and of course, unfortunately, that's the plague that we had for many years, we still have there, but there are other beautiful aspects of it. You know, I'm not going to dwell in there. Maybe I'll do a whole episode on Sicily at one point, but that's... but yeah, I'm proud and glad I was born there, and the amount of sunshine I got in my bones hopefully will keep me going for for a while more. But I do miss the sunshine. I do miss the I don't know, the friendliness, the sea, and all of that stuff. Although of course I'm super grateful to the UK for welcoming me 20 years ago, nearly now. So I was born in Sicily. I studied as an architect, so I'm not going to bore you with my childhood episodes unless, of course, there is something that is worth sharing at some point that is related to sustainability. But just to share how I came here and what took me to this point, I would say very quickly, and then I'll dwell into this in future episodes, I hope. So I came in the UK with a degree, a five-year degree in architecture. I was 23, I think. Yes, I was. And I was full of hopes. Of course I was, because Sicily, unfortunately, as beautiful as it is and as sunny as it is, it didn't offer a lot in terms of jobs and really a future, which was painful in a way, but I was also 23, so I was ready to take the leap and do something different with my life. And I loved it. You know, I loved coming to the UK. I loved having a future here. You know, the certainty, or at least, you know, foolishness at that age, that I was going to have a future in, at that time, architecture. That's what I thought I was going to do for the rest of my life, because I loved it. I graduated really well with the full, you know, marks in Laudem, as you call it in Italy. So really with a pat on the back as well. I loved it. I was so interested in buildings, in the history of buildings, in the shape of buildings and the feelings and everything else. Architecture was absolutely what I wanted. I got Stendhal syndrome when I looked at buildings back then. I really, really loved it. And then reality hit, really, because I came to the UK, and as I said, I loved it. There were so many things I loved about the UK. Well, first of all, it was completely different from Sicily entirely. And I loved London. It looked grand and it looked, you know, European, incredibly European at that point. But in its own uniqueness, of course, because, yeah, London has that multicultural vibe, and everything about London fascinated me. It was a completely different world. And then I started working as an architect, freshly graduated. In fact, I left for the UK the first week after I graduated, which was quite crazy. But I really didn't want to compromise. I really didn't want to spend my time working for free, which was the prospect at that point, just to gain experience and being squeezed like a lemon, and just, you know, long hours, no pay, staying at home with mum and dad. I didn't find it appealing, so I moved here. But then reality hit, as I said, and I had to find something. And it wasn't in architecture to start with, because, surprise, surprise, I didn't speak a word of English. I really didn't. And I studied French at school, and I studied Spanish in Spain when I spent 6 months doing the Erasmus project, so a European exchange project, back at university. So I knew two languages, but none of them were English. So I really came here with the foolishness and the naivety of a 20-year-old girl that want to really do something with her life, and with the enormous baggage of coming from Sicily. So I wasn't joking when people really used to identify me with mafia as soon as they saw me, without even knowing who I was and what was my voice. what did it sound like? Mafia was all they could think of, and unfortunately that comes with not trusting the person you got in front of you. It comes with a lot of baggage, and then I was foreigner, and then I was a woman. And all of this really categorized me as a minority. So I didn't find a job in architecture for several months, nearly a year. And so for 9 months, my first 9 months in the UK, I worked in restaurants. Ta-da! Italian restaurants and even Chinese restaurants. So if you read my book, Sustainable, you know a bit of this story. But I think it's worth repeating, because it's one of those things that when you think back, really made me proud of myself and the fact that I've overcome quite a lot. And of course, there are people that endure so much more than I did. But at that time, I felt quite humbled by the experience, by the fact that when people ask me something, I didn't know what to answer back. When they say thank you, I just smiled because I didn't know what to say back. I didn't know the expression, you're welcome. And my smile got me out of trouble several times at that point. So I worked in Italian restaurants because that's where I belonged in a way at that point. I was exotic, like the food that we were serving. But I was full of life and full of willingness to do well. So I knew that was just an obligatory, is that what you say? Obligatory passage. It needed to happen this way. I needed to earn some money, understand life in the UK. I needed to find my feet. I really needed to live by myself, learn to cook, and all of that stuff when you're 20 something. So it actually, and the process of working in a restaurant, serving drinks at the end of a night where people are already drunk and they don't care about what you're serving them, and maybe they, they're dancing at the end of the night because there is a party, and then you bring a coffee and they don't even see you, and then they knock the coffee over, and then you quietly go back and cry. Because that's what happens after you're tired, after 6 hours of working really hard. And yet, that's what happened. When people mock you for your accent, which happened to me several times. Again, different times, I got to say. 20 years on, it's different now. But back then, it was something. Coming from another country, trying to make a living. And then cleaning the toilets in the restaurants. I was thinking, I got a degree, I'm cleaning the toilets of a restaurant. But at the same time, I felt proud because I was, so it was a very troubling double feeling of feeling proud of myself because I could support myself for the first time. I was living, with my boyfriend at that time. And everything seemed amazing because I actually managed to find a job and actually managed to support myself. And on the other side, I felt sad because I had a degree and I was cleaning the toilets and, being mocked because I said the beer instead of beer or whatever it is, the right pronunciation. Now I look back to that girl and I feel, I would like to hug her because she was really trying her best, and it's part of me, and it made me resilient. And as I said, these are just experiences that, thank goodness, didn't last for a long time. But there are lots of people out there that endure a lot more than I did, and hats off to them. But this is part of my life, and I'm proud of it. And even the experience working in a Chinese restaurant, which was even more interesting, I would say, because it meant not having even the recognition that I was a person. And I'm going to explain. The whole of the kitchen was made of Chinese men. And bless them, they didn't speak much more English than I did, so they couldn't understand my name. So they called me Italy 2, because Italy 1 was my manager and friend, who was also another Italian girl who was there before me. So I was Italy 2. I didn't even have a name at that point. And once, for example, I fell in the kitchen. I slipped at the end of the night, where the floor was quite slippery and greasy, with two huge bowls of soup in my hands. And I knocked my knees against the wall. So the wall stopped me from actually falling completely. And I really hurt myself. And the guys in the kitchen laughed. That was it. You know, nobody helped me. And I cried again. Anyway. So it was, you know, part of growing up, a part of becoming who I am today, learning to stand on my own feet and count on myself and on the people that, you know, that could support me. And that was a phase, of course, and that was an interesting phase. It taught me a lot. I worked in a bar as well. I worked in a bar coffee bar, whereas I knew that the manager was stealing from the till and I didn't know what to do. Anyway, now I laugh going back to those times, but it was very interesting for me. It was all new and it was all exciting in a way, even though it felt weird at times. Sustainability, how does it come into this? Well, at that point, I had some lectures back in Italy in my university course by one person, Mario. And if you're listening to this, Mario, say hello. He was a teacher assistant, and he was giving us lectures now and then. Now, Mario was a completely different character from the rest of the other professors. So professors at university, especially in Italy, they really have a status. They are important people. And, you know, Italian university is, you know, its roots are in tradition. And so lots, you know, our lectures were incredibly boring. Imagine this is obviously before computers could be used in our everyday life to, say, draw on the computer. So we were doing everything by hand. There weren't, you know, electronic whiteboards or anything like this, like kids got today. So it was a blackboard and a professor talking, and they were really boring. But Mario was different. Mario was one of the first pioneers of what was called at that time bioarchitectura, or bioarchitecture, if you want to translate it literally in English. And he was one of the first people to do a degree in sustainable architecture, effectively. And it was completely unheard of at that time. So when my other professors were literally worshipping concrete blocks and big glazed surfaces, he was talking about houses embedded in the landscape and the green roofs. And he was an expert in green roofs, in fact. And he was talking about natural materials and breathable walls and all of that, you know, and the rest of the stuff that now we see quite regularly in architecture. But back then, it was a completely new experience for us. So we were literally looking at it with our jaws dropping. And he was jumping up and down the stage while he was telling us these things and showing us pictures as well. Surprise! He was actually showing us pictures. Amazing. Slides, in fact. And I don't know, that experience completely changed me. When I looked at those buildings, I thought, imagine what it is to live in there. Imagine what it is. And mind, I used to live in a concrete block, a 1970s concrete block at the seventh floor with my family in a flat. And it was crumbling in places, but it was not dissimilar to many houses and flats back in Sicily. Really badly done, really cold in winter, really warm in summer, no insulation, really not a great place where to be. But you know what, it was what it was. And I never thought about it until I saw what could be different, you know, living in a way that is harmonious and not like a punch in the eye, like we say, in the middle of nature, but actually really in an interchange with nature, working in harmony with it. And that changed me completely. That was the beginning of my life in sustainability, I think. Then I go back, you know, to childhood and the things I used to do, and well, maybe one day I will share, you know, the games I used to play, and I can see how sustainability also got in there. But yes, the first professional experience was during the lectures that my friend, well, now he's my friend, Mario, did back at that time. And then when I moved to the UK, I started working in architecture. And it was disappointing, you know, like I was saying a few minutes ago, reality hit and it was completely disappointing. I really didn't like the way people didn't care about making buildings better, to work in harmony with people. They were like empty sculptures for my colleagues, for my bosses. They didn't have anything that was, you know, vaguely similar to what my lecturer showed me, my friend Mario showed me a few years before. And plus, you know, reality hit in many other ways. So with the fact that I was foreigner, like I said before, and a woman, and I was young, so I really didn't count for anything. When I managed to find a job in architecture in a small office, that was after many, many, many trials, after having knocked at the door of this poor, bless him, architect back in the days, he's not with us anymore. He was an old, super intelligent, very creative guy that I got him for, you know, with tiredness, basically. I tired him out. I knocked at his door 4 or 5 times in the space of 4 or 5 months. And in the end, he was like, okay, come and work here. He just couldn't bear me going with my CV in my hands anymore. And it was hard. It was a struggle. But in the end, I managed to move from restaurants and coffee shops to a small office, a small architectural office, and I was absolutely gobsmacked by the reality. Actually, I got to say, that first boss of mine really cared about materials and, natural materials and integration with nature, etc., which was a great experience. But I was a young woman, and he couldn't understand how I didn't know how to design a building, because thank you, Italian architecture degree, I only had the theoretical experience. I didn't actually have any practical experience. So we had a lot of fights, bless him, really a lot of fights, because he just couldn't understand how I didn't know anything, even though I graduated super well. Yeah, so that was another learning curve, learning how to draw or how to be creative, really, while at the same time following the rules. And so I started admiring this guy who had decades of experience. He was in his 60s at that point, so, but he never got to retire. I think he worked until the end of his life a few years ago. And He was an amazingly creative architect. He really did beautiful things, and he was a craftsman as well, so I learned a lot from him. But at the same time, it was so hard. It was so hard to be the only employee with him and his wife. His wife was doing the admin work. They were lovely people, don't get me wrong. I got invited over for dinner at theirs, you know, a number of times, but we had so many contrasts about my inability to be an architect. And I didn't know where to start. And I didn't know, you know, and Italian architecture is very different, and techniques are very different from British architecture and techniques. So it was a huge learning curve for me, but I learned a lot, and I stayed there for 1.5 years. And then I moved to another office once I got my master's degree. So that's another chapter possibly, but at that point I realized, okay, I really want to make sustainability the center of my work. I want to be an architect, but I want to be an architect that makes buildings where people want to live, want to play, want to work. So I decided to do a master's degree at Oxford Brookes University. And I loved it. I loved, again, I mean, you can tell probably from all of this that I'm a very enthusiastic person. I'm an optimist anyway. I like learning as well. So even the negative experiences for me have been learning curves, which is all welcome. Although, of course, on the spot, I didn't think that way. That's obvious, isn't it? We're humans, after all. So, yeah, the master's in Oxford Brookes, you know, I used to go a couple of times a week to Oxford, travelling by bus. And I loved learning about all the renewable energy, ideas and techniques and technologies, and about carbon and what was the real problem. I really loved it. And from then on, I never looked back. I thought sustainability had to be integrated into buildings, and architecture couldn't exist per se without being sustainable, because it just didn't make sense. And I never thought anything different. I think sustainability has to be the norm. It's a no-brainer. And it's a no-brainer for all of the sustainability people that I know. And we still scratch our heads how it can't be a no-brainer for everyone, but we'll get there, because I have my idea about that. So I completed my master's and I moved on to another office where, to be fair, they were paying me a lot more. and that was the end of my architectural career, because without naming names, it wasn't a good experience. I had 1.5 years in there. And I mean, I'm saying it's not a good experience. It was a good experience. I learned a little bit as well there, but it was super, super male dominated. I had three male bosses, and there was me, and there was a colleague of mine, another girl, similar age, and we were the ones that were making coffees when the clients came. And yeah, I mean, of course we're the juniors, and that's understandable, but at the same time I wanted to be recognized for, you know, because I was also an architect. And when I went to building sites, I used to get, "Hello, sweetheart." I don't know how to imitate the accent, the Cockney accent, but it was like, well, I'm not a sweetheart, I'm an architect, you know. I just didn't feel respected. I just didn't feel that as a woman in construction, I had a voice. I was young, as I said, I was foreigner, I was a woman. Three elements that really contributed to not make me feel confident around other professionals, other people on the building site, in the office with clients, etc. And it took a really long time to gain confidence in that sense. So the situation didn't help. And then in the end, I quit when I realized unless something drastically changed, I wouldn't stay, because clients you know, we used to do extensions for luxury clients. Basically, the mansions in Chelsea, in the middle of London, million pounds properties. And we used to do extensions and renovations there. And once we had this American lady asking us to do a renovation in her mansion in Chelsea. And the renovation was about, you know, it was around six bathrooms in her home. So this was our job, but we had to renovate the six bathrooms. Okay, per se, okay, it's a job, whatever. But in the end, she wanted exactly the same decor, exactly the same materials, but new. So she chucked away, you know, a bunch of old fabric. She had wall fabric, like padded wall fabric, like I would think you had in a mental institution back in the days. Just it was flowery, it wasn't white. And then wooden panels, and she wanted exactly the same thing, and she wanted the same sanitary fittings, just new but with the same old style. So to be fair, it just was pointless in my head. Just why are we doing? We're wasting all these materials, we're wasting all this stuff just to have the same old style. So to start with, from an architectural point of view, it was incredibly frustrating. Not only that, it was also pointless. There was nothing interesting in that project. There was nothing meaningful in that project. We had two architects, so me and my boss, two interior designers, the contractor, an advisor to the lady herself, around the table on a weekly basis to talk about six bathrooms. It was just crazy. And the last of this job was when building works started. She demanded a plastic tunnel to go from the front entrance to each of the bathrooms. Like if you picture E.T., you know, the movie, you know what I mean. So this plastic tunnel going from the front entrance to each of the bathroom to avoid dust settling on the furniture and everything else. I don't know, it was an enormous amount of money spent on something completely pointless. And I thought, no, I don't want to do this. Now that I tasted, you know, what it meant to make buildings more sustainable, and for a reason, because we needed to, because it was a no-brainer. Architecture as an empty shell that just looks pretty just didn't work for me. And so I quit. And that was the beginning of my next chapter, which I'm probably going to tell you about another time. So I hope you enjoyed this first glimpse into my past, into what made me a sustainability professional. And I hope you will follow me. And yeah, let me know what you think of this if you're listening. And until next time, take care. And I will speak later. Bye.